pale horse. The man who sat on him was death.
And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Declarations of War, Eve's longest-running podcast. This is episode 273. I'm your host, NAR CEO Alexei Avkar, joined by my faithful co-host, CEO of Collusion, Zero Cool.
Hello, hello.
This is Declarations of War, where we discuss Eve PvP and politics with a mercenary perspective, and we have quite the announcement on this show. But before we get to it, our poll. We always start off with the poll. Last episode, we had the Oz on, and we talked a lot about the EVE economy, specifically what shape it's in. The January economic report came out, and we had an interesting conversation about inflation and the rate of inflation and if inflation is good or bad. He made a case that inflation is actually good for the economy. Knows a lot more about EVE economics than I do, so I'd take him at his word. But we put out a scientific survey to our audience to see if they agree. 76% of people actually think we need slow and steady deflation in EVE. So prices coming down, money supply contracting. I thought that was an interesting one. I never really have need to do this for a lot of the polls that we do, but I wound up looking up some videos on YouTube about deflation versus inflation, why so many economists agree that inflation is good if it's controlled. Because to my mind, and I imagine to the mind of most of our audience, based on this poll, if you are constantly having prices go up and having money worth less, that's just not a great state to be in.
Yeah, I would agree with that. When you look at why inflation happens, right? Sometimes it's because there's too much competition for the stuff that's out there, right? So, in other words, if there are only, 100 of a ship available, then the people selling those ships can control that price and increase that price because, there's 200 people out there that want the ships. There are only 100 in supply. That means that those 100 are going to be worth more than they would if they were oversupplied. But another way of looking at it is maybe price is high and going up because things cost more to produce. Which is, there's an interrelationship between those two things, right?
Sure, for sure.
But generally, things increasing in price suggests to you that there's a lot of activity.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it. And he kind of talked about this with the velocity of money. We touched on it a little bit. We didn't really go super deep. But the idea if a billionaire comes back to Eve but doesn't spend any of that money, it's like the money isn't actually there. The only money that matters in the economy is money that's actively changing hands. And if you have more players doing more things, creating more value, making more transactions, you're increasing the amount of money that's actually putting pressure on the economy, pressure in terms of economic force. So the more players spend and the more players that are available to spend, that makes sense. And I think in EVE especially, where, and let's be honest, the faucets of money are not really real world equivalent. Like there's an infinite supply of rats effectively. So you can go out and you can make as much money. Many, many players can make as much money as they can think of. There's really no end to it. I don't know what the real life equivalent would be, but we have mining too, but it's as if the mines never run out and it's not just owned by one company. Literally everyone in the world can go mine them and it just never runs out. So yeah, gold would have no value because everyone would have it. It's a similar idea. CCP has to work to pull ISK out of the economy. And the more new players are coming in and the more ISK they're generating, the more things they're creating, the more rats they're killing. It's just, it's causing the economy to grow generally, which is good. Economic growth is good. And to your point, that may result in costs going up depending on how that growth is taking shape. If they're not doing it in ways that lower cost to produce, but are doing it in ways that increase demand, then yeah, inflation's going to go up.
I still like the fact that in EVE, the affordability entry point is I think in a decent place, right? You can do quite a lot with a relatively modest amount of ISK, and you can make a modest amount of ISK in a modestly short time. It is quite possible. I saw a Reddit question today on Reddit, R. Eve, you know, what's a noob-friendly way of making money in NullSec? And I didn't look at the comments because I didn't really need to, but you know that there's a lot of ways as a new player to make a lot of money in NullSec.
Yeah, which is crazy. You could get into the end game space, quote unquote, and even as a player with probably less than a year in the game under your belt, less than 6 months under your belt, you can meaningfully make a lot of money out there.
Yeah, and it's relative to what you can fly then, isn't it? You can fly Tech 1 cruisers and below affordably as a new player.
You can mine, salvage, exploration, very new player accessible.
I started Beltratting in NullSec when I was early in the game, and I couldn't believe how much ISK I was making and salvage and loot and stuff. I was like, oh wow, this is, you know, compared to HiSec, this is crazy.
We were trying to break into NullSec before they had combat anomalies, and pretty much everyone made their money off of belt ratting.
Yeah, I had a few comments from people eventually. You know, when I got further into the game, and then I would still go out and belt rat because, I don't know, a little bit therapeutic, I'd get chuckled at, and people would say, oh my god, it's been years since I saw anyone belt ratting in a Myrmidon or whatever it was.
We didn't really have a lot of veterans in the fleet that I was mentioning. We had players who played a couple years, and I was talking about how to set it up so that you maximize your security status gains going from system to system. And offhand, I mentioned chaining belts.
Yeah.
Like, Alec, what's that? What do you mean, what's that? I've never heard of such a thing.
I heard a rumor that got taken away a few months ago. Belt chaining became a non-thing.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know the specifics.
Tried it not so recently, and it seemed to work, but it might have been before that.
We're talking 2 or 3 months ago.
Yeah, it might have been before that that I tried it. Oh, that's a shame if that went away.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was intentional necessarily, but I don't think anyone complained that chaining belts was overpowered.
Yeah, right. It was nice for LoSec, though, if you really wanted to grind your security status, you had some time to do it. You could manipulate the chaining process to ensure that you'd always get a battleship in each system. So rather than try to get a battleship in each belt, you kind of do the same thing, but you'd only have to worry about the one battleship spawn in the entire system, so you wouldn't have to go through all the belts. But the same principle applied. If it wasn't a battleship spawn, clear it out. It'll re-roll the random encounter table, so to speak, and give you a chance at a belt spawn when that belt repopulates. Essentially, how that worked.
And I imagine
if you did get a battleship, you kill everything except one of the frigates, which makes the entire wave respawn without that re-roll.
I imagine that clearing the wave of non-battleships is still an effective way to increase the amount of battleship spawns in the system. I think the bit that they nerfed was leaving the one frigate, right? I think that no longer creates a new spawn of battleships. But I'm happy to be corrected.
It does undercut it somewhat.
Yeah, I'm happy to be corrected on that if I'm telling, you know, fibs.
Well, very interesting discussion. If you haven't caught that episode with the Oz, it's 272. Highly recommend it. Some great insight into the EVE economy and how the new CSM is working. But our top story, a major announcement concerning Noir and the network. This is not necessarily server-shattering news, but as the longtime listeners of the show know, the story of Declarations of War is very much also a story of Noir and how we've evolved and grown and the contracts we've taken, the friends we've made, the enemies we've made, and the great stories of EVE that we've been pulled into. And it's time for the network story to come to a close. Yesterday, I announced that the network is disbanding, and we are merging Noir and Z-Man Industries, two of our member corps, into Templus Calcif, who you may remember from many Alliance tournaments. Templus Calcif are longtime friends of ours. I've been flying with them for a long time, way back in my Great Wildlands days. which is quite a while ago at this point. This is pre-noir relaunch, the capitalist army era for longtime listeners of the show. We were actually in Calcif for about 2 years. And honestly, when I got back to noir, I would have relaunched noir within Templus Calcif if they weren't in Kaldari Faction Warfare, which was especially terrible at the time. This was pre-rework, pre-CCP Aurora, the Dark Ages. It would have been perfect. They had a great alliance, really get along with them. Met them a couple times at Vegas and other places. Good bunch of dudes, and we still kept in touch with them. We would scrim against them for tournament practices. Some of our pilots joined their tournament team as mercenaries. So we've had a long-standing connection with Calcif. Recently, they underwent a bit of a schism in their alliance. A big chunk of them decided to split off due to some cultural differences and remain in Kaldari faction warfare. The core of Templus Calcif, what I would consider the core, all the players that I had gotten to know and flow with, were all staying together over the smaller chunk and were looking to leave Kaldari militia and do something else. So I pitched them, well, this is an interesting idea. You know, we just had a member corp leave and lost all of our low-sec infrastructure as a result. We're kind of taking a look at the landscape right now. We recently had a fight with Garista militia where somehow the Galenti had the bigger fleet, which didn't quite feel right. So I pitched them on this idea. What if we teamed up and joined Garista militia together? It would be a long-term good bet for us because we love being in fleets and alliance together. And then faction warfare-wise, we could balance things out. You know, if you guys are up for it, maybe you can still help us with contracts. And they're like, yeah, sounds good. So over the past month or so, we've all been grinding our standings, and we're ready to pull the trigger on it. So Noir will be in Templus Calcif pretty soon, either the day that you're listening to this or probably the day after. And then very shortly thereafter, we'll be joining Garista Militia, still based in the same place, but now with double the targets and some very attractive PVE when we're in between contracts and need to make some money. We'll be able to do it a lot faster.
How was the grind to Garista's positivity?
You know, not too bad. The Garista epic arc is pretty easy. It's got not the most compelling storyline, but it's not bad either. The missions themselves are very unique compared to a lot of EVE missions, like the level 4 security missions most players might be familiar with. It can all be done in a frigate, and it's all relatively quick. There's a really good guide on e-files. You can search it. Just search Garista Epic Arc Guide on Google. It'll pop up. It's a couple pages long, walks you through everything step by step. Very clear instructions. We've even made a one-page cheat sheet around it. And with Zarzak now being added to the game, you can get from Galenti Losec to the systems that you need to be in for the missions super fast. 15 minutes in a shuttle. They've built an interdiction now. So getting where you need to go is easy. Completing the missions is relatively simple. There are players which camp the routes in between the systems, looking for people doing exactly what I've just described. Those can be a bit tricky, but most of the players in Noir that have run these missions have not been caught by them, so they're fairly avoidable. You just have to be careful. If you're not in an interdiction nullified ship, don't warp directly gate to gate. If you're undocking, there's a fair chance some of the stations might be camped. But just keep your eye out for aligns that are directly in line from when you undock. You should be all right. Total time, we've had some players in Noir complete this in under an hour. I was not that fast. I did it in 2.
And just the one pass?
Yeah, I think you can only do one every 3 months or so. But that one pass was plenty. I think it shot me up 6 standing.
Yeah, I found the same thing. Yeah,
it's great. And you only need -2 as a corp average to come in to the Garista Warfare, Garista Faction Warfare. So
gotcha.
You don't really need that much. It was a matter of kicking a handful of inactive players who probably needed to get kicked anyway because they hadn't been playing for a while. And then of the remaining actives, which is everybody ran the Epic Arc once, and that did the trick.
I found the same thing doing the Angel one pre-patch. And it was interested to see a little different side of the game for a bit and avoid those gate camps and such. And they were quite intense back then because obviously everyone was doing this. And I found an item that you get at the end, right, Al? Just add this in. There's an item you get at the end, and I took it all the way back to Jita to sell it. And I discovered that I'd have made a lot more ISK if I sold it in the station that the award is given, okay? Because in Jita,
oh, really?
Yeah, people were buying it for half the cost. So I spent the next 3 months buying these items off other people. And once I got to about 100, I took them all down to that station back down in Curse and sold them all to the NPC order. So, that little trade secret has kind of run its course now. I get about one hit on this once a week now. So somebody sells me one of these things half price once a week. So, yeah, I'm quite happy to reveal that little secret now.
The big reward for the Grista version is a Gila BPC, which... not really as shiny now as it used to be, but it's still good.
Very nice.
Yeah, this will be interesting. I don't think we plan on religiously going to every incursion that pops up or insurgency that pops up. I think if it's close or we need to make some ISK, we'll probably do it. But if nothing else, just the additional PvP, we'll get to shoot Galenti Militia and Kaldari Militia, and we'll get Grista LP for killing them. That is a pretty nice prospect.
So Templars, no, then, have they been doing mostly faction warfare for the last few years? Or I know they do the tournament stuff, right?
They do tournament stuff. They've been, I think they're the oldest faction warfare alliance, one of the first to ever put themselves into it. And they've never left Kaldari Militia since they joined it until just now. They've not always been the most active in terms of the faction warfare content itself, particularly prior to the rework. They were actually mostly an LSEC alliance. But since the rework, they have taken quite a bit of the lead in Kaldari Militia. They're one of the two or three largest alliances, and at least to our estimation, they were the best, the most the most dangerous to fight. That, of course, it's a different group now. A lot of the strong Kaldari Militia players, a good 200-300 of them, characters-wise, I think, have left to do their own thing. So it's not going to be of the same size, but the best FCs and the highest caliber pilots are all staying in the Kalsif brand. Hopefully we'll help them bolster numbers. I don't know if they have plans to add any other corps to the alliance in the future or not. Hopefully we do continue to grow. But even if not, I think it's the right move for Noir. They're the partner corp we've always wanted. I've talked about it on the show a couple times. I'm always trying to pitch for it. I wanted another corp that was sort of Noir equivalent in terms of size and skill to partner up with. But a lot of those corps are already happily in alliances. They're happily in their own alliance in this case. So I'm taking my own advice, the advice that I give to plenty of other players when they come to talk to me. My corp is struggling, or I'm thinking about making my own corp. And I would ask them, like, all right, well, why you? Why are you running your own alliance? Why not merge with so-and-so? There are a lot of chiefs, not a lot of Indians in the game. I know the game is growing in general, but I still think it's true. There are a lot of alliances that are just kind of doing their own thing because the people that are running them just want to be the leader, or they have some sort of, we've always been here and done it this way kind of thing. I didn't want to be that group. I think partnering with Templars Kalsif is the right move, and just because I'm not solely running the alliance or don't own the alliance doesn't mean that's still not the right move. So putting that aside, we're going to keep doing our Noir mercenary stuff. That's not changing, but now we have help from some of the guys in Templars, and we get into the content that they're into as well. They help stabilize their membership base, and we both together get to go off on this new adventure of pirate faction warfare and see where that takes us.
Very nice.
We've already had their help on a few contracts now, even prior to the official merger, and it's been invaluable. The amount of DPS some of their players can bring with their ability to multi-box has made structure grind contracts go incredibly fast. And I'm really looking forward to having the last Spartan It was their premier FC. Yeah, he's one of the best FCs I've flown with, and I'm really looking forward to getting in on his fleets again, and the idea of him FCing some contract fights for us, quite appealing. So hopefully he'll do that someday soon.
Indeed.
Well, dear listeners, we will continue to bring you more news on the merger as it happens. In the meantime, Noir and Z-Man are just going to slide on into Calcif and get ourselves set up on their infrastructure. We'll probably have a good week or two of just, you know, stretching our legs, being able to shoot Galenti militia for a bit. I think there are quite a few people that are happy to be fighting their friends for a change, just to test the metal, so to speak. That'll, I'm sure, get boring eventually, and then we'll go do some pirate insurgency stuff and let you know how that is. But I think for right now, we're just kind of in a transitionary period. We're actually going to take a contract starting tomorrow, and once that contract is done, then we'll see. Hopefully by this weekend, we'll have some nice bloody battles to talk about.
So will Z-Man be involved in contracts as well? I know some of those people from Syndicate, Six Taxi.
Yep, absolutely. There's not a lot of actives in the corp right now, but when they are on, they do play on contracts, and they play quite well. Shout-outs to Felix for his tackle work. In other areas of space, this is also something that Network has been involved in, just as a target of opportunity more than anything. There's been a lot of controversy around war decks and war decking alliances recently. A number of these deck alliances have war decked the wrong people and have found their headquarters under attack from groups like Initiative, Razor, other members of, I think it's Phoenix Coalition now, is what they're calling themselves, the former former residents of the North after Fraternity kicked a lot of those groups out. Banderlogs is still hanging in there. Synergy of Steel, I think, is the main core alliance, although I've mostly chatted with Razor about this directly. But between all those alliances, they're able to field a fleet that can meaningfully contest the HiSec Wardeck Cartel's fleets. And they've been pressing their HQs relentlessly, taking them out, sometimes without even a fight. And to be clear, at least on some of these fleets I've seen, the Wardeck alliances could definitely take that fight, but it'd be dicey. They're not getting completely blobbed out. So when I say big NullSec alliances, don't put in your head this gigantic blue blob. This is each alliance on their own being able to field a fleet of like 40, 50 people against a group of alliances which themselves can field fleets of 40 or 50 people. So fairly even. The decks are supposed to drop when the headquarters go down. The idea is if the defender can destroy the attacker's headquarters, they get 2 weeks before the attacker can re-war deck them, and all war decks attached to that headquarter go into that inactive state. That didn't work for these HiSec war deck alliances who, you know, the whole reason they're doing these decks is to attack structures, or at least that's a considerable reason of why they're doing it. And they've already done the work to reinforce them, so they want to go make sure that they die. So what they did was set up some shell alliances ahead of time, typically the same name, but they would change the spacing of the letters or something like that. Pirate is the main offender for this particular, not calling it an exploit, because CCP hasn't declared it an exploit, but this particular circumvention of the game design. They would create these shell alliances. When the main alliance's war headquarter would get popped, they would declare war with the shell alliance, have all of the players quit the main alliance, which is now no longer at war, and join the new alliance. So these characters would basically flood out of the one, right into the other, and continue the war deck as if nothing happened, often with not even a day's worth of break in between. This resulted in several structures dying that probably shouldn't have, and the defenders having to kill 3 or 4 war deck HQs to try to get the result of ending the war that just killing the first one should have. Obviously, you can imagine this being quite frustrating for the defenders and quite controversial because of how the war deck system is designed and the value that defenders are supposed to get from undocking, fleeting up, participating in the war by going out to fight and destroy the attacker's headquarters. That's not happening.
So this also works the other way around, right?
How do you mean?
So the first time I came across this mechanic being used was a few years ago. There's a high sec, and there's many that do this, I imagine, but I'll give an example of one. There's a high sec alliance called Absolute Order, right? You familiar?
Yep.
An Absolute Order, the way they run it is they have all of their members in a non-war deckable alliance, and then they have all of their structures in a different alliance. And then when it comes time to defend their structures or attack somebody else's structure, they war deck or receive a war deck on the structure hold in alliance. They flood their members into a corp. And then once the fight is over, they put them all back in the non-war deckable alliance so that their members can't get targeted in Jita or in high sec in general. And then because of cooldowns, they have several of these corps in the war deckable alliance. They've got like 15 of them or whatever. So that to avoid cooldown, then if they need to make an, if they need to do another fight, the members can flood into the next corp down the list. And you can just continue ad infinitum, really.
Yeah, that's not great either. For context for the audience, CSM 7 was the CSM where the war deck system got reworked in. I and at the time the head of Eve University, who was constantly getting war decked, worked really heavily with game designers on the new war deck system. It's far from perfect, but it's a considerable improvement over what we had before. And there were a number of these exploits that came up that we wanted to get loopholes closed on. Some of them did get closed because they were already kind of on our radar from the previous war deck system. Some were kind of put on the radar, but then on the back burner and didn't get changed for a while, like remote repping and high sec, but did eventually get changed. This one is interesting because the possibility of doing some of these came up very early on, and it was kind of agreed that the defender should have less restrictions on this than the attacker. Now, you can't say if you're at war, you can't recruit anyone. That would be a kiss of death almost. But there were restrictions on corporations and things, you know, war decks following corporations when they left so that people couldn't be the attacker and then drop out of a war. Or defenders do that without any risks whatsoever. And a very key piece that got put in was this idea of the war deck headquarter, that the attacker had to put up something of value that the defender could counterattack at to kind of level the playing field. Overall game design around this, you know, regardless of loopholes of people coming in and out of alliances, which I appreciate can be difficult, but the core of the war deck headquarter was very explicit. Force the attacker to say, we're going to have to risk something besides 50 million ISK or whatever measly amount of money it is. And the defender has some counterplay. We wanted to incentivize defenders to not just quit the game entirely or felt like they were only on the back foot and couldn't really do anything. We wanted to give them a way to fight back if they were organized enough or if they could talk enough allies into helping them or whatever the scenario, give them something to shoot for. And the reward would be you get these guys off your back for a little while. 2 weeks, maybe not long enough, but you know, that's what they went with. It definitely was not intended that if you killed the war headquarters, the same players would be back at your door finishing off any structures they reinforced the next day. I don't know exactly what route should be taken to counterman this, whether it's a technical change or whether it's a rules change. There needs to be some enforcement probably at the leadership level of how that's going on, or maybe the alliances themselves get nuked and people are out the money. I don't know the way to handle this. I guess it depends on CCP's resources and preferred strategy. But it does seem like a flagrant controversion of a very explicit game design. To my mind, that's an exploit by definition. I did reach out to CCP for comment, and I can read this statement for you verbatim. I don't know if they've posted it publicly or if this is a DOW exclusive, but quote, We have been observing, investigating, and are actively monitoring the situation in question. Likewise, we feel adequately appraised of the context of the engagements. At the moment, the activity we've seen is demonstrably not declared an exploit. However, we reserve the right to change that policy in the future should our game designers decide this is an egregious abuse of mechanics. We will continue to monitor the situation and updating relevant parties internally.
Okay, that's
so that's the word from CCP, which seems reasonable. What that reads to me, this is my interpretation of that statement. They don't have any explicit rule against this on the books, but they are concerned about it and are at least discussing whether or not there should be.
Yeah, that's I think that's a fair read, and reserving the right to lose their patience with any more egregious. Yeah. I mean, I think,
and very key, they're not saying that this is totally fine. It's just we haven't made a decision on this before. It hasn't come up onto that radar yet.
I mean, in terms of changing the game mechanics rather than just declaring an exploit, right? I think there are two sides you could take on this. Probably the more complex side would be to say, well, if a character is involved in a war against an alliance and that character leaves that war by changing corps, they can't join they can't be involved in a war against that alliance for 2 weeks or whatever, right? Something like that. Now that sounds far too complicated to implement to me. A simpler change, I think, would be to say, well, and this could be abused, the other side, but to say, well, if you succeed in a war by destroying your opponent's war HQ, maybe you should get 2 weeks of grace from Wardex from anyone.
But then you'll have people destroying their own headquarters.
If that was declared an exploit to begin with, is the only way I can think of to circumvent that obvious possibility. But I think context is important, right? Like I said, this stuff with Absolute Orders, and I'm sure they're not the only ones, right? They're just the ones I'm aware of. The way they use the ability to flip alliances is very similar. And they do it offensively as well, right? Or at least they used to, and I'm pretty sure they still do. Although I think these days they pick fights in NullSec more, so they don't have to do these silly things.
I'm sure they've done it in HiSec as well. I've seen some...
They've definitely done it in
HiSec, which have raised some eyebrows. But
yeah, I remember it happening a few years ago, right? So I can say for certainty they've definitely used it offensively in HiSec.
Here's the key distinction. If you're the attacker, you can't do that as a corporation. But there's nothing stopping all the players in that corporation from leaving and then joining somewhere else.
And yeah.
There really isn't any mechanical way, really reasonable way to say that's an alt alliance if it already exists and already has a set of characters in it. Say there's Pirate Alliance 1 and Pirate Alliance 2. Pirate Alliance 1 attacks, reinforces a structure, then loses their HQ. Then Pirate Alliance 2 war decks. That itself, also fine. The issue is where Pirate Alliance 1 and Pirate Alliance 2 are sharing the same membership because they're just going back and forth. That is the tweak where they're getting around the restriction on the corporations by just doing it as individuals. But they're not doing it as individuals. They're doing it as a corporation or even as an entire alliance. I don't know how you mechanic game design around that, which is why I think the right move is saying some sort of this is an exploit declaration and then committing to investigate reports of it. Because I think as a human, as a GM or as a trust and safety professional, you could look at that player behavior and make some pretty well-supported conclusions about what's happening. But I think that's going to be very difficult to design an entire game system around preventing without causing a lot of unintended consequences and pain in the asses for players who are just trying to leave corporations that are at war and aren't planning on doing anything nefarious afterwards.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to see anything changed on that front. But it would be nice if, say, like right now, I'll take Absolute Order again as an example, right? They've got a lot of structures in HiSec. And they've got a lot of membership in HiSec, right? And other places, but there in particular. Now, if you as a small group want to go and harass them, then you can declare war on them, right? And attack their stuff in HiSec. But you're only going to get, you know, empty corps with structures, a until the timer arrives, at which point they'll bring in 150 people from their main active alliance and fight you on the timer. And then immediately after the timer, then they'll put all 150 people back in the non-war-deckable alliance. So as somebody perhaps searching for targets in HiSec, groups that use this mechanic defensively as well, you know, it prevents that sort of siege and conflict and stuff in those circumstances as well. So I think it would be nice to see some adjustments.
I think maybe the design solution is decks follow players for a certain period of time. Maybe that, I mean, you talked about it being difficult to implement, and it probably is, but it might be the only way.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, we've always discussed war decks as a corporation and alliance mechanic, because that's what it's intended to be. We've never really had, prior to these groups this year, or maybe the last year, players doing this en masse. You know, usually they would stick with their corporation, and that would be it. But then again, you've also never really had players standing up to these war deck alliances like this. I think it happened a bit last year or the year before that, and clearly this is the adaptation these groups are adopting to try to insulate themselves from the consequences of, oh yeah, some of these NullSec alliances are willing to come into HiSec now and kick over our sandcastles. We still want to war deck them, but we don't want to live with the consequences of our actions. We still want to get all the kills and all the structure fights offensively. We don't want to pay for it defensively by having it disrupt our gameplay, war decking an alliance that we can't handle. Which I think is scuzzy. I don't like it.
Well, I'll repeat what I said.
Worked with Razor to participate in some of those fights for exactly that reason. Most of them, like I said, never came of anything because the Pirates didn't take the field. But just as someone who had a hand, a very large hand, in crafting the new war deck system, I don't like what they're doing to it. Feels personal. So
it took a while, though, Alec, to really make that difference, right? Fair enough.
It was most of CSM7.
But I mean,
the first half of it was pretty much that.
It took a while for them to abuse it in this way, is what I'm...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it took a good long while, but I think it's also because corporations had a hard time challenging those alliances. The alliances that they had war decked, like the NullSec guys, typically isn't worth their time to come in and tangle with the Pirates to do that. They would just ignore it. And then after a bit, they just co-opted them kind of with the Tranquility Trading Tower. The war deck cartels were essentially put on retainer to help protect it. And it kind of formed that cartel where now all of these disparate war deck groups, it used to be just privateers and like one other alliance that would do this kind of gameplay. Then it fractured a bit. You had Marmite, you had Vendetta, you had a few other groups like that. And they knew each other, but often were not necessarily on the friendliest of terms. But now they're all working together. There's a lot of these groups that are on the same page. You've got Wrecking Machine, SRS, Black Flag, Pirate, Vendetta. They're all kind of in the same conglomerate. And they're, at least narrative-wise, I don't know if this is exactly the timing of how it played out, but it felt like they really gelled as a group when they got put on the same page by the TTT money. All those groups got pulled into that, and now they all had incentive not to fight against each other, but to actually start working together. And working with the NullSec alliances that would otherwise be well positioned to fight them. Now that the TTT fell apart, those NullSec alliances are like, oh yeah, we should probably destroy some of their shit because we actually do need to protect our HiSec structures. So they're coming in and doing it, and they actually have the firepower to make it happen. And even together, these war deck alliances are having a hard time competing with that. So rather than, you know, go all in on direct combat, they're trying to get around it with this alliance shuffle. And then I think they'll just stop war decking alliances that they know will punch them back, or at least won't do it on their alliances with decent structures.
Indeed.
Our final story, speaking of shenanigans, it got on Reddit. I don't know how much we want to talk about it, Zero, but considering that we had covered that story very extensively while it was happening, the EVE University wormhole eviction came back into the news recently with the publication of a comically lengthy set of, it's not quite an AAR, was it meeting minutes? What is this thing?
You've got in one. It's a summary of a meeting that occurred between line members, because although some of those people in that meeting would have had different roles.
It's over 50 pages long.
So I don't know if you noticed the name of the person who authored this particular masterpiece. He's Professor Academiac, and that might give you a hint as to the approach such a person takes to such things, right? An Academiac. EVE University is not a pseudo intellectual educational institution. It is an intellectual and educational institution, right? Much like universities I've attended in real life, and as such, it has people that enjoy the theory and the reflection that you would expect from a public type institution that is involved in an education and service, right? So say if this was like a publicly owned, government-owned university, then this level of scrutiny is the kind of thing that it might produce, right? Whether anyone reads such things or not is, well, it depends on your appetite for, how many pages was it? 35, something like that?
It clocked in at 54, although admittedly some of that is table of contents.
Now,
there's also pictures and a page of reference links.
I've even seen like diagrams that have been crafted specifically for this document, right? I sort of scrolled through it and I saw, hierarchical structures and things given in sort of graphical format. And those are novel, right? They were produced, I imagine, specifically for this document. This is not somebody using a template, for example. This is somebody taking the time to produce this. Now, I was invited to this meeting that took place. They called it like the friendly fireside, or they were pitchforks or something, friendly pitchforks. And I declined the invitation because I said that I'd already said everything that I wanted to say. And at the time, as a manager of one of the departments that was, under scrutiny, that my absence would do more for the meeting than presence. And, you know, I've read some of this report, and I will say that, you know, although it doesn't represent everybody's views, that, you know, all of the views of the people in EVE University, there's a significant proportion of the line membership. And by line membership in this context, I mean there are people that have titles and roles and things in the EVE University, but they don't necessarily represent those titles and roles when they participate in something like this, because this is kind of like outside of their sphere of, you know, responsibility. So they're more acting as line members. So all the line members that turned up and contributed to this in the meeting and outside the meeting, it does reflect the sentiment that was going around after the eviction, because generally, and I don't mind talking about it, it's out there in the public. Generally, the EVE University handled the eviction and the aftermath, the immediate aftermath of the eviction, very well. There was some cohesion, there was a lot of team spirit, and there was no sign of a failure cascade of any sort. But what happened after, and this is what this document really talks about, is members became increasingly frustrated with the pace at which EVE University makes changes, makes decisions, and comments publicly on the senior leadership's thoughts, right? Because a big criticism in this document is that members felt that they were far too removed from the senior leadership's day-to-day thinking around things, and felt that, you know, people should have been kicked that weren't kicked quick enough, and things of that nature. And it's a detailed, you know, reflection of a group of people's thoughts, and there's nothing wrong with that, isn't it? And of course, the EVE Uni thread, the EVE Reddit thread about this EVE University thing, a lot of people on there, I notice in the comments, are very defensive towards EVE Uni, saying, well, hey, you know, they just, this is their meta, right? This is their game. This is what they do. Let them be EVE's academics. It's fine. You know, let them dissect their own failures and things. And And why not, right? It's a very different type of political spin than the type that Eve is probably used to. I mean, Eve Uni is full of very self-reflective people that are always striving to improve.
And I think that's fair. And a lot of people explain, like, hey, this is an academic thing. And Eve is an institution in many ways. People who take the game a little less seriously could, you know, throw stones, but this is how they do it. And I think one poster put it best, like, reports like this are lengthy and Byzantine, but they also represent complete transparency. If nothing else, it's thorough.
Yeah.
It's quite thorough. So, you know, if you had concerns about what's happened or didn't know what happened, or they wanted to be a full accounting that was, provided accountability to everyone involved in what is a very diverse and disparate leadership structure, this has that. There's a couple notations which indicate some facts in here might not actually be accurate, but those areas are highlighted and correct information is edited in. So I don't quite know how to take it, because this isn't certainly the kind of document I would sit down and take the time to write about something that happened in Noir. It'd most likely be a 1 to 2 word count length thing for a Discord post. But I can appreciate the amount of work that this clearly took. And I do know that there are people, especially in organizations like Eve University, which would feel more comforted to have a document like this to point at.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, I would say, represents the darker and muddier side of the stick. There is another side to this story that is more positive, more friendly and warm and, you know, soft. And it doesn't tell that side of the story necessarily, because, you know, it was the friendly pitchfork meeting, right? It's not the, let's prop each other up and pat each other on the back meeting. And there was some of that in Eve University's own AAR, right, which was quite transparent as well. It was very thorough as well. I don't know if you've read it, Alec. It's also publicly available. That AAR from the directors does shine a little more light on the positives, and I think it does it in a fair and balanced way. But this document gets to the heart of some of the stuff that is mentioned in the official report around people's grievances and some accusations of, you know, impropriety or inadequacy or whatever. So, overall, another fine addition to the record. You know, Eve University is all about record keeping. It's coming up to its 20th anniversary in 2 weeks. So they'll be celebrating that over the weekend. And, you know, there's a long and storied history associated with Eve University that somebody has got written down somewhere. A lot of it is on the wiki. So, you know, if anyone really wanted to know the history, they could. And this is just another source for that. You know, maybe it'll be read someday in the future where people sort of scratch their heads about what happened 10 years ago.
I kind of appreciate that attention to legacy.
Yeah.
Moving on to host highlights, I've got a quickie. We took a Tormentor fleet out and faced a nano fleet about half our size, but Tormentors are Tech 1 frigates, as you'll recall. So we were a bit concerned. I was really skeptical of fighting it in the first place. It had a curse in it, which automatically not great. Had an Osprey Navy, a Caracal, and a Bellicose, and then two destroyers. Another one came later. So that is the worst ship to tackle in the game. Two of the best anti-frigate ships in the game, although they did recently get nerfed. And then a Bellicose, which has a painter bonus. And then some anti-frigate DPS. What could go wrong? I was like, all right. Well, I was thinking about it. I'm like, okay, if we bait the curse on the Tormentors, get him to newt us first, that might give a window for a slasher that slides in just a little bit behind us to get on top of him and scram him before it gets his scram turned off. Worked like a charm. And that curse was pricey. $322 million. We got in there. We lost one Inquisitor, which got neutered out, and we lost a Rifter, who had a bit of a thin tank. Everybody else survived. We wound up killing their entire fleet somehow. And yeah, it was a thing of beauty. I got to give a shout out to Imantus Triber, as well as our logistics guys, Austane, Akiari, and the other guy was Silverbee. Incredible, incredible work keeping the fleet alive there, and a beautifully timed, aggressive tackle by Imantus and a slasher. He was like a second or two behind the tormentors, just enough so that he wasn't top of mind for that curse. And the curse was also a little bit closer to us than he probably should have been. So as soon as he landed, I think he must have overheated the micro warp drive or something, because he got on that guy so fast. Unbelievable. It was quite the cleanup once we got him. It got a little spicy there just beforehand because we lost the one Lodgy. But overall, we came out ahead, and then we also cleaned up a Coercer and a Condor that slid in behind us. Overall, it was a great fight. Killed almost 500 million ISK, lost under 50 million ISK, and I think our entire fleet was worth less than the Osprey Navy by itself. Not too bad.
A rare appearance from the Crucifier Navy, I see.
Yeah, you know, I've been trying to bring it out more in this fleet. The Tormentor fleet. I don't always do it because it's far more expensive than the Tormentors. And feels kind of counterintuitive to the concept of the fleet to bring something as expensive. But it's still only 20-25 mil. DPS-wise, it does a little bit more than the Tormentors. Tank-wise, it has a little bit more than the Tormentors. It doesn't have any tackle, but it does have tracking and guidance disruption. And it opens up the ability for us to fight much larger ships. We really don't have to worry about, say, a Brutix or a Hyperion we killed with these things one time. Because it can grapple Scram, and it might be able to hit us, but if it's tracking disrupted, even with all of that, it still won't.
Yeah, I suppose it's just smart bombs to worry about then, and light drones.
Yep. Which we did face a smart bombing Praxis not too shortly after that, but we managed to kill him too.
Very nice.
But yeah, I've been loving the Crucifier Navy. It's a niche ship. I can only bring it if I have enough Tormentors to like cover and Inquisitors to get Lodgy. I don't want to bring it out with like no Lodgy, and it needs to have tackle because it doesn't have any tackle. But if there's already a handful of Inquisitors, already a handful of Tormentors, I've been trying to use it more, and I've been enjoying it.
Well, from me, I've been playing EVE, right? But I haven't really done anything new or exciting in the last 2 weeks. I did go out on a fleet with EVE University and scouted for them after one of their Intro to Fleets classes. We'd arranged that a few weeks in advance, a few of us that know each other well. And that was a lot of fun. So it's worth a mention. But really what I've done over the last 2 weeks, aside from tournament practice and some tournament practice in between work, I've been spending some time with my oldest daughter who went to university 6 months ago, and we've been visiting her in the city that she's in university in, meeting her new partner, and she's just loving life, you know, living in the city, and it was just nice to spend some time there. We had a lovely Indian meal from a restaurant that I really enjoy in that city that recently got mentioned in the Michelin guide, so I was quite proud of them for that. Not known Michelin stars yet, but, you know, they're working on it, I think.
Is it a far trip?
No, it's
to get to her? Like, did she go quite far from where you guys live?
Not at all. I've got two cities near me, both about 22 minutes away on the train.
Oh, that's not too bad.
She chose one of those, and yeah, I can drive there or take the train.
I bet you she wishes you don't, though.
Well, she's quite happy for me to drive there when it comes to picking her up with her stuff, right. Or dropping her off with loads of stuff. Yeah, no problem.
Is she taking laundry home?
No, she's very independent. Oh, does nice. Everything herself.
Not Josh in a little bit. That's really cool. Speaking of universities, and doubling back to EVE University for a second, are you doing any presentations or classes for their marathon coming up?
I only found out about the marathon a few days ago, and we've arranged some tournament practices for that weekend. But I am tempted to do what I can. And they're going to do some sort of teach-a-thon event. And I was definitely going to consider doing some PvP-related sessions there if they need people to jump in. And I imagine they will, right? Because although they've got plenty of active teachers to cover, you know, a 24 or 48-hour period or whatever it is, you know, the more help, the better. So, and, you know, if it's varied, the content as well. So I think I might bring out some slightly more novel teaching ideas that I've had for a while and maybe do some freeform PvP-type discussion and things like that. Maybe talk about, I don't know, do a session on tournaments, do a session on small gang, large fleets, nullsec stuff, touch on wormholes. Yeah, it'd be good.
I feel like they had quite a few spots left. I actually I threw my hat in there because I was free and it seemed like a fun event. So I will be doing a 1-hour lecture on the EVE Tactical Wheel.
Nice.
Which I haven't talked about in a long time, actually, outside of just explaining it to Nor Academy guys on Discord, like very informally. So this will be a fun one. I'm going to make slides and everything.
Very nice. I think I was exposed to this when I was in Nor Academy, and it was part of the manual. And I think we spoke about it as well. So I think
It might be in the manual. I'll have to dig through that. We might have something on it already. But yeah, it's just a key concept. I think it's worth it for any FC to understand, but I think for NOR pilots, even if you're not FCing, you should get it and know how your fleets are supposed to run and how they match up against other types of fleets. And this is part of that. And you can even scale it all the way down. In fact, a lot of this information is in the Frigate Yearbook, but it's scaled down to frigate versus frigate combat. A lot of the principles still apply in terms of brawling versus kiting versus range control, etc.
Yes, I did expand on it a bit, and I did a class on a similar sort of metric, right? It was we did a class on DPS, tank, and control, and trying to show, you know, the three components of a fleet or ship fit. You can reduce it down to the individual ship, or you can take it all the way to a fleet size. The idea that a fleet consists of a DPS component, a control component, and an element of tank, whether that be, you know, raw buffer, or, you know, logi reps, or speed tanking, for example. You know, I'm sort of trying to break it down for FCs in that way.
Yeah, brilliant. I'm looking forward to it. I think that's this weekend. Should be good time. I want to give some shout outs to our Golden Elite supporters who have continued to support us through most of last year, and we got some new folks in this year. We give a shout out to AFK Agro, aka Braille, Fate Atreides, Kestrel Swainson, Krav, Mark Havoc, Tane Tengu, and Tweak. You guys are amazing. We've picked up some non-Golden Elite level VIPs as well in the Discord. Always nice to see you guys. Anyone that can support at any level, we're tremendously grateful. Come check it out. Discord has not only the host of Declarations of War and other people from NOR, but it also has many of the guests that we've had. Well, not all, but a good portion. So you've got CCP devs, you've got EVE celebs, you've got FCs, bounty hunter type people. It's just really a cool place to be. I want to give a shout out to Solly for his continued help with the most aggressive multi-boxing I've ever seen. Last week we talked about it with his T1 Ewar multi-boxing with all of his crucifiers. This time around it was bombers. Helped us clean up some Pocos. Much appreciated, my friend. And in general, I'd like to give a shout out to the pilots in the Galenti militia. There have been some really good ones, and some of the best were the guys in Federation Frontline, Gwen and Frozen Fallout. Really going to miss having them in the Alliance. Wish them the best of luck. And wish the best of luck to everyone that's not them, that is going to find themselves on the other end of Nora's gun barrels in about an hour.
Well, for me, my shout out goes to another podcast that I've listened to a few times. It started, I believe, in September 2023. It's the HTFU podcast. For anyone who's been in EVE a long time, you'll know what HTFU stands for, Harden the F Up. They don't mind using the full expression on their own podcast. It's run by a man, I believe, in Germany, or at least one of them. And some of the episodes are in German, but the last three episodes have been in English. They really produce a podcast once a month. They're quite long, and they have some very esoteric topics on there. So there's things like an interview with CCP Vertex talking about granular stuff around the technical side of Eve and the dev side of that. And then another granular episode from a guest called Pan, who was, according to this podcast, and I have no reason to disbelieve it, a very influential community manager at the very beginning of Eve, and then came back after a break in the sort of midpoint of Eve's lifespan, and, you know, was involved in quite a few kind of the big stories and things. So Pan goes into some stories there. So just, you know, worth a mention, really, that there's another podcast out there for, you know, another side of Eve.
Brilliant. Well, that's it, guys. Head to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show poll. Leave a comment on the episode. NOR recruitment is open. Garista Militia, brand new adventure for us. We are taking players with even negative Garista standings. We should have a nice court buffer going on. We're going to pause NA recruitment temporarily as we make this alliance transition, because we need to get some standings built up there. But we look forward to bringing that back very soon. Meantime, just apply directly to the corp, or, you know, if you want to check us out, come hang out on the Discord, make some friends, see if we're the right group for you. If you want to hang out with us, join CafeNoir. The link to the Discord is there. It's cafe.noir.ingame. We can answer all your questions. Maybe you want to join us for a fleet. Come have a good time. Wherever you are and whoever you're flying with. Good hunting, listeners.